Are you ready to take control of your physical, emotional, spiritual, professional, and financial health? Are you ready to experience great success in your life? Each week, join Dr. Diane A. Thompson and her guests for tools and strategies to help you take control of your health and inspire you to live your best life. Now here is your host, Dr. Diane A. Thompson.
Well, hello, and welcome to Health Talk with Dr. Diane M.D. This is the show that's designed to inform and inspire you to a healthier lifestyle. I am your host, Diane A. Thompson, M.D., and as always, it is my pleasure spending time with you on this broadcast with a goal that you will learn something that may take your health and life to a higher level. Of course, you know that this broadcast is for educational purposes only and is not intended for diagnosis or treatment. Please consult with your healthcare provider before making any changes to your health. All right, well, today we have a wonderful and informative show for you. You know, it is estimated that about 5 to 6 million Americans are affected by a little known and often misunderstood disease called fibromyalgia. Many people suffer for years before getting an accurate diagnosis, and it's believed that it's in part due to, one, the symptoms of fibromyalgia may mimic those of other conditions. Two, there's still some healthcare providers who may not be familiar with the disease. And three, sometimes patients simply ignore their initial symptoms. Well, our goal on today's show is to demystify fibromyalgia. And to help me do this is Dr. Jennifer Cottle. Dr. Cottle is a board-certified family medicine physician and assistant professor of medicine. She's a national speaker and health expert who has been featured on numerous networks, including CNN, Fox News, NBC, ABC. She's been all over. And, of course, we know that she had a recent appearance on Dr. Oz where she was talking about this very subject, fibromyalgia. And my hope is that we will expand on that discussion today. Dr. Cottle was also previously here on Health Talk back in January. And I remember we were supposed to talk about a whole different subject, and then the flu epidemic happened. And she was gracious enough to change the topic at the last moment so that we could accommodate the questions that our listeners had. So I'm very, very thankful for that. And, of course, she's back today to talk with us about the topic of fibromyalgia. Dr. Cottle, welcome back to Health Talk.
Thanks so much for having me. It's great being back.
I saw your recent appearance on Dr. Oz, and, you know, that subject of fibromyalgia, I'm so happy that there's some attention being brought to the subject because there's so many people out there where, for them, this is so misunderstood. I actually remember the first time I really heard about fibromyalgia. I'd been a nurse and nurse practitioner before, really didn't come across too many people with it. But as a medical student, I was shadowing an orthopedic surgeon, and I remember the patient came in for an orthopedic concern. But along with that, she kept mentioning the other things that were going on, pain and difficulty sleeping, just a myriad of complaints. And when we went outside the door, the surgeon said to me, "This is a wonderful woman. I've known her for years, but somebody gave her the diagnosis of fibromyalgia." And he said, "And I just don't believe in that diagnosis. I believe it's in her head." So unfortunately, there are people who still believe this and really want to clear up this myth today. So let's start from the basic. What exactly is fibromyalgia?
Oh, that's a great question. And Dr. Diane, I really appreciate your story of what you just told. I think what you said is at the crux of a lot of people's issues with this condition. There's a lot of people who really don't think fibromyalgia is a real medical condition. And that's not just on the side of patients, but it's oftentimes on the side of healthcare professionals as well. You know, before I talk a little bit about what fibro is, I wanted to mention that the American Osteopathic Association recently did a study sort of a survey. And one of the questions that was asked of a number of people was, you know, what do you know about fibromyalgia? Have you ever heard of it? And the AOA actually came to the conclusion that approximately one-third of people out there, Americans, either don't know that it's a condition or have never heard of it at all. So this is really an important show. I'm really glad we're talking about it. But it's interesting how the stigma sometimes applies to both sides, not only patients but doctors. But fibromyalgia, let's talk about the nuts and bolts definition. Breaking it down to very simply what it is, fibromyalgia is a chronic pain condition where the patients who have it have, number one, they have widespread chronic pain. Widespread means it's all over their bodies. It's not just in one particular place. Chronic also means that it's been going on for a while, at least 3 months. So patients have this sort of widespread chronic pain, but in addition to that, they must have other symptoms. Either cognitive symptoms or other physical symptoms. It can be anxiety, depression, insomnia, irritable bowel syndrome, you name it. But it's a combination of both this chronic widespread pain as well as these other cognitive symptoms that really creates this diagnosis of fibromyalgia. And one of the most important things to keep in mind is that these symptoms are not attributable to another cause, meaning the doctor's done all sorts of tests and ruled out other conditions. And it's not arthritis, it's not lupus, it's not you name it. That's how we come to this conclusion that it's fibro.
And so you mentioned this widespread chronic pain. Can you talk a little bit about this pain? Meaning, is the characteristic different? Does it tend to be located in certain areas, unlike other types of pain?
Sure. That's really interesting. It is widespread, which means it can happen anywhere in the body, from the neck to the arms, the legs, etc. It tends to be non-articular, which means it's not so much necessarily joint pain, but it can actually be sort of patients have what we call tender points. Basically, these areas on their body that when a certain amount of pressure is applied to these different areas, they feel a certain amount of pain that maybe you or I or someone who doesn't have fibromyalgia doesn't actually feel. So I think maybe one of the best ways to describe it is tender points throughout the body, areas of tenderness on different parts of the body that are tender when they really shouldn't be.
Okay, and let's go back a little bit. So we know what it looks like, and it's a constellation of these symptoms, but do we know what causes fibromyalgia?
This is something that's still under investigation. Again, fibromyalgia has been a mysterious condition or has been thought of that way for such a long time. We actually didn't even have diagnostic criteria until 1990. So, we kind of knew this was a condition, but it wasn't until as late as 1990 that doctors were actually given sort of a roadmap to help diagnose patients with this. What we think is going on at this point is that there's a problem with what we call central pain processing, which means that the brain acts differently in patients who have fibromyalgia. So, for example, a patient who doesn't have fibromyalgia, let's say I were to pinch them. I'm going to pinch someone on the shoulder who doesn't have fibromyalgia. Now, they might find it uncomfortable, but they may not feel the same way as someone who does have fibromyalgia. If I pinch that same patient, or rather a different patient with fibromyalgia in the same place, that patient very likely would feel the pain much greater. And what we think is happening is that the brains of people with fibromyalgia really perceives pain at a lot greater levels. It's almost like the volume is turned up in their brains in terms of pain, and they feel pain greater, it's more painful, they feel it more. Yes.
So they're feeling the pain more than the average folk would. So at this point, we don't necessarily know what caused that to occur.
We think that there's a number of neural pathways involved, lots of biochemical issues, substance P. There's a number of things in the brain that causes this central processing change. Okay, so that's what we think is going on, things with the nerves in the brain, the receptors. But all of this combined really causes a patient who has fibromyalgia to feel pain at a greater level than someone who doesn't have fibromyalgia.
Is there something that puts one person at a greater risk of developing this more than someone else?
Well, there are some things we think actually does. You know, we know that fibromyalgia can coexist with many other conditions. And in particular, we know that fibro often coexists in patients who have other rheumatological diseases, things like lupus or rheumatoid arthritis or other conditions, Sjogren's disease, et cetera. So we do tend to find more people with rheumatoid issues, or rather rheumatological issues, also having fibro. But we also think that sometimes fibromyalgia is triggered by some life event, whether it's a trauma, like a car accident, or whether it's something like post-traumatic stress disorder or an event that triggers that. But we also think that sometimes there's either a physical or an emotional trigger in someone's life that really begins this cascade of fibromyalgia symptoms. And I would say those two conditions are two conditions that are certainly talked about a lot in the medical literature, coexisting with other rheumatological conditions and then being triggered by some sort of trauma.
So knowing this, then, are we able in any way to prevent fibromyalgia?
Oh, that's a really interesting question. You know, I don't know that I get that question asked a lot. I think that's a fantastic question. Are we able to prevent fibromyalgia? You know, I think one of the best things that we can do, and this really goes along no matter what medical condition we're talking about, is, you know, one of the best ways to prevent many illnesses is to make sure that we're having regular checkups with our doctor and that we're addressing any symptoms that come up that are not right, okay? Whether it's problems with sleep or problems with mood or problems with blood pressure, whatever it might be, I think one of the best ways to deal with anything health-wise is, of course, to see your doctor regularly. Can I say without a doubt that that there's one thing that you could do or not do that would prevent this from coming on? No. It's a multifactorial condition, which means that there's a lot of factors in play. There's not just one. So the triggers of the things that brings on one person's fibromyalgia may not be the same triggers that bring on someone else's, but certainly regular checkups with your doctor and making sure that you see your doctor when problems arise hopefully will help, you know, rather nip it in the bud or really get a jump start if you are developing fibromyalgia.
And I'm going to go back to something you mentioned. Now, I mean, I feel that years ago, I did not hear much about fibromyalgia. Is it that there is more of it occurring, or is it that as healthcare providers, we're more aware of it, and so we're actually looking for it?
I think that, you know, I'm not sure if the incidence is greater now in terms of the people who have fibromyalgia, but I'll tell you one thing. I know that as the primary care physician and, you know, as physicians, I think doctors are paying more attention to this condition, and many more doctors and healthcare providers are really taking this more seriously. You remember, we didn't have diagnostic criteria. We didn't have a way to diagnose this before the year 1990. 1990 was not that long ago. And if you think about it, even though this condition has existed for a very long time, in terms of really being able to be addressed in the medical community in a formal way, the condition's actually a baby. It's sort of, you know, it's very infantile. So, you know, I think the fact that in 1990 we developed ways to diagnose it, there's been a lot more literature, these criteria have been revised, and now there's a lot more talk about it. I certainly would bet that physician and healthcare provider awareness certainly has a lot to do, you know, with patients and patient care.
You're listening to Health Talk with Dr. Diane, MD, sponsored by FMG Radio. Please visit Dr. Diane and browse her past shows and guest bios at fmgradio.com/Dr. Diane, MD. That's DrDianeMD.
Welcome to Health Talk with Dr. Diane, MD. My guest today is board-certified family medicine physician, Dr. Jennifer Caudill, and our topic today is fibromyalgia. Now, Dr. Caudill, you talked about, you basically earlier talked about some of the signs and symptoms that a patient may notice. Do you want to go into a little bit more detail? So if someone is out there having certain symptoms, they may wonder and this may prompt them to go in and seek some attention?
Absolutely. Well, the first hallmark of this condition is chronic widespread pain. And what I mean by that is chronic pain means that you've had pain for at least 3 months or longer, so it's been going on for a while. widespread part of it really means that the pain is not just, say, in your knee or in a shoulder or a joint. It's all over the body. That can be the muscles. It can be, the arms, the legs, different points. And patients often feel what we call tender points, meaning just areas that are sore, that are uncomfortable. So that's the first hallmark of this condition, is chronic widespread pain. Now, the second thing to keep in mind really is that this pain is not attributable to some other condition. So let's say you know that you have osteoarthritis or arthritis in your knees. Then that's not fibromyalgia. That's arthritis. If you have, let's say you have a history of rheumatoid arthritis and you have problems with your hands as a result of rheumatoid arthritis, it's not to say you can't also have fibromyalgia, but the issue with your hands may very well be rheumatoid arthritis as opposed to the fibro. So fibro pain is not, cannot be explained by anything else, any other condition. But the other thing that really is important to keep in mind is that fibro patients don't just have pain. They have other symptoms. They have what we call cognitive symptoms. They have other physical symptoms. So some of my fibro patients, they describe sometimes feeling really tired, fatigue, having insomnia, really not being able to sleep. Some of my fibro patients have anxiety or depression that they're dealing with. They might have irritable bowel symptoms or reflux disease. Some of my patients have headaches. There's a number of symptoms. I actually have a couple of patients that really feel what we call fibro fog. If you've read online, you might have heard that term, fibro fog. It's a description that sometimes fibromyalgia patients give to feeling like they're just in a fog. They feel fuzzy. They may be forgetful, as some people actually have such bad pain that they feel like they can't get out of bed in the morning. They feel like they've been hit by a bus. So it's really this constellation of symptoms, the chronic widespread pain that can't be attributable to anything else, and then these other symptoms, such as the headache, the insomnia, fatigue, et cetera. And those are the things you really should be looking out for. So if you're out there listening and you're like, oh, I wonder if this is me, think about what it is I'm talking about and the symptoms you might have, and how many of them and how long they've been going on. And if you really don't have an explanation for those symptoms, you really should be talking to your doctor either way to get some solutions. And fibromyalgia just might be part of one of the options or one of the possibilities for a diagnosis for you.
I have a question here for someone on chat, and they're asking about the pain, and they wanted to know, does the pain occur at certain time of the day? Like, if they wake up, like as in some types of arthritis where you may wake up with early morning pain, does fibro pain occur at certain times of the day, or is it all the time?
Oh, that's a great question. So first of all, I should say that fibro patients, each one is very, very different. So one fibro patient might have a certain type of pain that occurs in a certain way, whereas another fibro patient may be different. But some classic patterns, I should say, and there is no one answer to this, by the way. There is no diagnostic way that fibro pain happens. It can happen in different parts of the body. Some people, it's localized to one part of the body versus the others. Some people feel stiff when they get out of bed. Some people get more pain when they exercise a lot. These are what we call fibro flares. These flares are going to be different for different people. So the short answer is no. There is not one simple way that fibro pain happens to be able to distinguish it from others. But what people will notice who have fibro is that they can tell when their flares are going to come on. They learn what types of things bring their pain on, whether it's the morning stiffness or stiffness after exercise or what have you. So that's really more of what we see with patients with fibromyalgia.
Okay. Now, in terms of diagnosis, how are people diagnosed?
First thing is to make sure that your symptoms aren't caused by something else. Fibromyalgia is a diagnosis in and of itself, and it stands on its own merit. But before we can call it fibro, we have to make sure it's not arthritis, rheumatoid arthritis, headache disorder, other things. So the first thing is you've got to go to your doctor and talk about your symptoms, and your doctor will likely run tests, whether they're blood tests or x-rays or other imaging tests. What's really important to keep in mind is that fibro is not diagnosed by any one test or x-ray. We don't have a lab or an x-ray that can say, this patient has fibromyalgia. what we use these labs for and these x-rays and images for is to rule out other conditions so that we make sure that it's not something else before we say fibro. So the way that you diagnose it is you keep track of your symptoms. I often recommend people to keep a symptom diary, maybe for 2 to 3 weeks. Notice when you're having pain, where the pain is coming, other associated symptoms, how you feel, how it affects your life. And actually, there's a great survey that the American Osteopathic Association has put together. You can actually fill out this form and take it to your doctor. If you go to osteopathic.org, that's osteopathic.org, you can go to the fibro section and fill out some, like a questionnaire. But take it to your doctor and have an honest conversation and begin the workup to try to figure out what actually is going on.
Wonderful. I actually love that idea of a symptom diary. I think it's so helpful with so many different disorders. Now, well, you mentioned go to your doctor. And, of course, you know, there's so many specialists out there that take care of different things. So for the average patient who is going in for this, is there a particular doctor? Do they start with the primary care doctor? Where do they go?
Well, I say absolutely. Start with your PCP or your primary care doctor. That can be your family doctor. You know, I'm a family doctor, a family practitioner. You could also start with your internist. It's whoever you go to first. I think that's a perfect way to start because your primary care physician can really speak with you about the symptoms that you're having and hopefully try to kind of weed them out and kind of figure out what direction to go in terms of investigating what's actually going on. Other physicians also treat fibromyalgia and often are specialists in this area. That would be our rheumatologists. They deal with rheumatological conditions and conditions of the bones and the joints and things like that. They're fantastic for dealing with fibro. So your primary care doctor may refer you to a rheumatologist, or if you're able to, you might also choose to go to a rheumatologist first off. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. But keep in mind that there are other types of physicians that sometimes get involved when we need them to. For fibro patients, that might be a neurologist or it could be a pain management specialist, you name it. But the first place to go, I'd say, is your primary care doctor. You could also consider going to a rheumatologist, and these are the doctors that should be able to help you out.
All right. And you mentioned, I mean, this is a constellation of symptoms. How does one treat this?
So the treatment for fibro tends to be as diverse and complex as the condition itself. You know, as you're listening to me talk about fibromyalgia, you're probably noticing that there's a lot of parts to it. There's the chronic widespread pain. There's the other symptoms, the fatigue, the anxiety, insomnia, whatever it is you might have. It's very complicated or rather complex. And every patient with fibro is very different. Interestingly enough, or maybe coincidentally, the treatment is just as diverse. So typically, in the medical literature, we tend to think that a comprehensive treatment plan tends to be best. In other words, we're not looking at one pill here, throw you a pill and say, okay, you're going to get better now. No, we might be looking at pills, but we're also going to be looking at other modalities. So let's start with the pills and just talk about that. There are 3 FDA-approved medications that are on the market that are indicated to treat fibromyalgia, and these can be really great options for patients. I have many patients that are on medications that help them, but we also know that pills are not often enough. Okay, it's one part of it, but it's not the whole story. So oftentimes patients need physical therapy or graded exercise or water therapy. Exercise has proven to be very helpful in fibromyalgia. Some people do well with cognitive behavioral therapy, which may help the anxiety or depression symptoms if that's the symptoms you have. It's important for physicians to talk about sleep hygiene, you know, how to get a better night's rest and to really address that, especially for those with the insomnia portions of it. And for some people, they really get relief from things like yoga or meditation or Tai Chi, even acupuncture. So there's a whole basket full of options that we have for treating this condition, and it's really important that as physicians and healthcare providers that we pick the right combination for each person, because I'll tell you one thing, every treatment plan is as different as every patient is.
That's great, and I definitely believe in this individualized care. I mean, that goes without saying. I wonder, are there any effective complementary treatment, aside from things like acupuncture or yoga, because there are people who they're out there buying all kinds of vitamins and supplements and things like that, and we don't want them to go down the wrong road. So is there anything that's actually proven that's out there on the market that's more of complementary type treatment?
Talking about vitamins and things in particular, I can't give you some specific vitamins that have been shown in good trials that to have a really strong effect on fibromyalgia. Remember, when it comes to many vitamins and supplements, they're not regulated by the FDA, so we often have to be very careful and just understanding what we're taking into our body. Some people will find that nutrition does play a role in their fibromyalgia symptoms. In other words, when they're eating fewer carbs, for example, or eating more fruits and vegetables, they may feel better. A lot of this has to do with the symptom diary, where patients tend to figure out and they tend to be able to guess at what's going to flare up their fibro versus what's not going to. And that's really going to be probably the most important thing for each patient with fibro to do, is to listen to their own body. But there's also other treatments. I mean, a couple of things I didn't mention. Osteopathic manipulative treatment, or OMT, can be very, very helpful for patients with pains throughout their body. And again, I mentioned the acupuncture and yoga and Tai Chi. You know, all of these things are recommended, but, you know, in terms of proven, I think we still have a ways to go in getting hard and fast data. But it really depends on the patient. And I say, if you get relief from it, you know, it may be the way to go. And just make sure that you talk with your doctor.
Great. So it's really important to listen to your body. And as you mentioned, that symptom diary may be very effective to point out things that are triggering your symptoms or making you feel better. Are there resources available for people who have been diagnosed with this?
That's a fantastic question. Okay, so you've been diagnosed with fibromyalgia, and what do you do now, you might be saying? You know, I always go back to the doctor. I guess I believe in the importance of our job as being good communicators and really helping our patients through sometimes difficult and confusing times. Start with your doctor. And make sure that when you're speaking with your doctor, you feel like you get your questions answered. You know, this is really one of those conditions where it's of utmost importance for patients to really feel like they can talk about what's going on, and it's really important for doctors to listen, because this is the type of condition where you're really not, you may not get to the bottom of it unless you can talk to your doctor and your doctor listens back. So that relationship is super important, and I often said this. I say this time and time again. If you don't, if you're not comfortable with your doctor, find a new one, because this is something that really requires that. There's a couple of things to look into when talking to your doctor. Actually, in the area that I practice in South Jersey, there are a couple of centers that specialize in fibromyalgia. I mean, they offer comprehensive care, water therapy, physical therapy, counseling, et cetera, all in one center. Your doctor may be able to point you to resources that have sort of, I guess, established like an established center for you to be able to go to and read about. You know, be careful about the information you read on the internet. Sometimes it can be very confusing and may not apply to your specific situation. So I think the best thing to do is, before you go on the internet and get yourself all scared, which can often happen to all of us, you should talk with your doctor about what websites they recommend for you. That's really the best place to start.
All right, great. And so our final question for you, Dr. Caudill, I usually love to leave our listeners with a tip of the week. And since we're talking about fibromyalgia, for a person that's diagnosed with it, is there one particular action that you would encourage that you think may help them to remain healthy or cope with their diagnosis?
I would say it's to remain hopeful. This is sometimes a very hard condition for patients because, you know, the symptoms can be so severe. I've had patients say that they aren't really able to work because their pain is so bad. They're not able to get out of bed on most days. They can't spend time with their grandchildren. It really can be a quality of life issue, and this can be really hard for patients. I think sometimes one of the hardest things throughout anything like this is to keep, for lack of a better phrase, keep hope alive, to stay optimistic, to stay hopeful, and to stay open-minded. And I think that's one of the best things you can do. There is help out there, and there are a number of treatment options. I think that's one of the best things about fibro, is that there's so many treatment options. it really allows many patients to really find that right combination for them. And I'd say be hopeful. If you need to find another healthcare provider or you're looking for something different, I say go for it. But just stay hopeful. You know, there's so many great options that I'm hopeful that you'll be able to find the right option for you. But I think that's one of the most important things through this or any other, you know, tough medical condition.
I love that. Keep hope alive. As always, you provide such great information. And, of course, I thank you so much for being on the show. How may our listeners contact you?
I love hearing from listeners and people who are out there. You can go to my website, www.jennifercaudle.com. That's JennifercaudleCom. And at my website, you can send me an email, you can follow me on Twitter, you can join my Facebook page and join the conversation, because actually a lot of what we've been talking about on Facebook and Twitter with my fans is just this topic. So join the conversation, let me know what you think, and let me know what you've been going through. I'd love to hear from you.
That is great. Thank you so much, Dr. Caudle, for coming on the show and continue to spread wonderful information out there. We love to see you out there because, of course, you give really wonderful information. So thanks again for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Okay, take care.
Okay, you too. Take care. Thank you.
All right, bye-bye. Once again, I thank Dr. Caudle, Dr. Jennifer Caudle, for coming on the show. I'll make sure that her contact information is on my Facebook page as well as on my LinkedIn page and every other social media that's out there. I think she's such a great resource for information, and she clearly cares about her patients and, you know, how they're doing with their illnesses. So we'll definitely be in touch with Dr. Caudle. I also want to thank you, the listeners, for coming back each and every week. I really appreciate it. I know you could be somewhere else, so I appreciate you being here. And this week I'm going to leave you with one idea, something I've been talking about on Facebook for the past week, and it's called Three Good Things. And it's the idea that if you focus on three good things that happened that day, like at the end of the day you sit and write down three good things, that what you'll notice is that you'll end up decreasing your level of stress and increasing your level of happiness. They actually did a study and had people do this just for a week, and the results lasted for months and months and months. So I think that I want you to take part in this idea of focusing on three good things. And one of the things that I think happens is when you're focusing on the things you have, you're not really focusing on the things you lack. So try the three good things this week and come on my Facebook page at facebook.com/Dr. Diane A. Thompson and let me know how things are going. Well, there you have it. Have a fabulous week. Remember, your health is your wealth. So please do something healthy for yourself this week, and I will see you on the broadcast next week. Take care, everyone.
You've been listening to Health Talk with Dr. Diane, MD. For show replays and full guest bios, please be sure to visit fmgradio.com/Dr. Diane, MD. That's DrDianeMD.